Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I am Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program here in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you doing today, Laura?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's Thursday afternoon. Woohoo!
You're so funny. I'm working after the show and tomorrow, too, so it's not my weekend yet, but I'm happy that it's yours.
Oh, thank you.
I'm happy that it's your weekend already. That's a good way to kick it off with the podcast, so there you go.
It is.
All right. We have some great questions from moms today. Oh, sorry about that. I hope I muted my cough. I think we have our first mom joining us here on the show. Hi.
Oh, good.
Hi.
Chloe, is this you?
Yeah.
Yay, you made it. We're so happy to have you join us here. And we've already started the show, and I have not introduced you or anything. So do you feel comfortable just kind of introducing yourself and answering your or asking your question, and we'll go from there?
Sure. I'm a first-time mom, and my daughter was premature. She was born 2 months early, and she's doing really well. She's 18 months, and her adjusted age is like 16 months.
Uh-huh.
And she just learned how to walk. She has mild cerebral palsy, and it just means that, like, the right side of her body is kind of stiff, but
mm-hmm.
she can use it and everything. But now I've been getting a little worried about speech because she seems to be a little behind, at least girls that we know that are the same adjusted age.
Right.
And so I'm kind of very...
kind of freaking out a little bit.
Yeah.
How many words does she...
I feel like a perfectionist sometimes, though. I don't even know if I should be worried, but...
Well, go ahead. You know, you've already sent your comment in to me, so I'm still going to ask you some questions, even though I know the answers, but I want our other listeners to be able to hear this, and especially other moms that are in the same situation as you. So tell us how... You said Chloe just started walking, and she's in PT and OT because of the... right side of her body issues, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and how long has she been in PT and OT?
She's been in it since about 6 months.
Okay, great. But they feel really happy with her progress, right?
Yeah, I mean, they feel good about it. They're not really specialists in CP or anything, so I don't know if they necessarily... Like, sometimes her OT says, oh, well, she's just left-handed. And I'm like, yeah, she's left-handed because she has trouble using her right hand. That's why we want to work on that.
Yeah. You sound so practical, doesn't she, Kate?
Yes.
Okay, so but you're really worried about her language because physically she's coming along. How many words does she have right now, Chloe?
I haven't counted, like, fully, but I think in the email I said she had maybe, like, four really good words, and then she has a lot of word approximations, and she likes to have one thing that she can say, and then she uses it to mean things that sound sort of similar. Like,
yeah,
she can say hot really well, like, if food is hot, and then she uses hot to mean hat and heart.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, and the thing about... using word approximations right now, even if she uses the same word for other things, as long as it's close, I still count it as a separate word. Because you've pointed out in your comment that she does have some vowel errors, and then, like, the words hot and heart are, you know, they've got the same beginning sound, the same ending sound. The difference would be the vowel there and that R in there. And, you know, we know R is a consonant that comes later in speech development. So I wouldn't worry too much about some of these words sounding alike because how you've described it in your comment to me that you left on the website, those still sound like perfectly acceptable approximations for her age and because she, you know, has a cerebral palsy diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
I would keep just working on the things that you're doing and try not to worry about her so much, because for her to have been through all the challenges that she's gotten through with, you know, with that diagnosis, and she's learned how to walk, and now she's even, you know, a lot of kids, and I know you probably don't want to hear this because you've already said you're a little bit of a perfectionist, but a lot of kids in her situation have no words for a long time. So the fact that she is trying to talk to you and uses some things that you recognize as real words, and you also went on to say that she loves to do animal sounds and that she's so smart that she has the little word approximations for this and that, and when she doesn't know the word, that's just what she calls it. And I think those are great. I would love it if she were doing this well. If she were a child that I was seeing on my caseload, I would be jumping up and down telling the mom, we are doing a great job. She sounds awesome. Kate, you feel the same way, don't you?
I do, because when I read the email, I thought, this looks really pretty good. I mean, I do. We're moms as well, and certainly understand your concern. Especially when there's a rocky start, it's just kind of scary and takes quite a while to get over, I think, that fear. But really, if I had her on my caseload, I would feel like, woohoo, we're doing beautifully. You know, I think she is. I do wonder this, Chloe, when you say she says hot, but she says that same, you know, sound or word for hat, does she label, like if she sees a hat, will she say hot? But
whenever she says a hat, she says hot.
Right. And see, I would totally count that as a separate word. Even though it sounds just like her hot, when she's showing you she knows what it is and she's using it spontaneously, it's just going to take a while longer before it comes out hat, and you're going to say, oh, she said hat!
You know, and I love that she's doing lots of different animal sounds, because that's where you can really work on those vowels and really kind of making the vowel match what the intended word should be. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've already ordered my DVDs, and the Apraxia DVD, one of the things that we talk about on there is using those kinds of play sounds to really facilitate words and facilitate that early sound production practice. So she's doing the things that I would have her working on in speech if she were on my caseload, and the things that I would be encouraging you to do. So I just want to just say you were doing a great job, and she may not qualify for speech yet because of her adjusted age. And, you know, when you look at that and say, okay, 5 words, 7 words at 16 months, although many children with typically developing skills have lots more words than that, but the minimum kind of baseline that we would want kids to have by 18 months is about 15 words. And so, you know, she's developmentally, she's not quite there yet. And by 15 months, we say 10 to, you know, that's 8 to 10 words. And so she is right on the cusp of that. So, you know, with early intervention programs in the United States that you have to have a certain percentage of eligibility. So I think you were right in your assumption that she may not qualify. Mm-hmm. But I don't want you to be disappointed about that yet, because you sound like a great mom and you're finding out information for her. You know, you're reading stuff on the website and then taking the time in to call a show like this, and you already ordered the DVD. So I think you're going to be able to do a lot of this at home. Now, that's not to say that she won't need speech eventually. She might. But again, I think you are doing a bang-up job with working with her and being concerned about her and just as on top of it as it sounds like you already are. So just keep doing what you're doing, because, you know, it sounds like you're on the right road.
Okay, thanks. I just have one more question.
Go ahead.
Is it really, it seems like really unusual for her to say a P at the end of book instead of a K. Like, I was reading that usually people say T instead of K.
Yeah, but, you know, she's young. She's really little. And so lots of times those K's and G's don't come in until kids are moving toward 3. And so I love that she already knows that a sound belongs at the end of that word, because lots of children don't even kind of get those final consonants until later. So don't be too concerned about her sound substitutions at this point. You just want to really continue to encourage those words. And there will be plenty of time later to correct. I can hear her. She sounds so sweet.
Just says daddy all day long.
Yeah. You know, I would really just celebrate her success with words and language and not worry too much yet about those speech sounds, because again, she's really, really young, and so you don't want to stifle her development or make her feel discouraged in any way. You know, when she's saying, what is she saying for book? Yeah. Yeah, and just don't worry about that yet. Just say, yes, book, and really model that, but don't, you know, overcorrect at this point, because she's awfully young for that. And even children who've not had the challenges that she has, you know, with the cerebral palsy diagnosis, make that same kind of error right now. So I wouldn't even get into all that analysis if I were you just yet. You know, there will be plenty of time for that. And I never work on specific sounds with kids as far as trying to correct that and getting them to say it, other than in the context of play and in the context of me saying, yes, it's a book. That's all that I would do for her at this age. I wouldn't say, you're saying it wrong. You know, I wouldn't do any of that. I would just keep modeling it the correct way and, you know, let her little system kind of sort it all out. And, you know, again, let me just say, it sounds like she's coming along great. Even though you kind of look at her age and maybe look at where other kids are, she still sounds like she's doing pretty well to me. Don't you think so, Kate?
Absolutely. Yep. Wouldn't all be right. Terribly concerned about her. I think
yeah,
you're doing everything you need to do.
Yeah, thanks. I would keep working with her. Yeah, just keep working with her and doing what you're doing. And, you know, I don't know if you have the DVDs or not, but yet I know that you've ordered them. But just take a look at those, and I promise those strategies work. It would be exactly what she was going to do in speech. If you've already got the appointment, if she qualifies, great. If she doesn't qualify and you're still worried about her, you know, after she turns two, as she marches toward 2.5, get her reevaluated at that point. But until then, you sound like the kind of mom really that can, you know, you're already kind of taking charge of this with her language. So just keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, thank
you. Thanks for calling. Bye.
I feel better.
Bye.
Okay. I hope so. I hope so. Are you there? Oh, I hear.
Yeah. I hear. Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that. I'd be tickled, even though she's saying book, that she's putting anything at the end. So, I mean, so many kids we work with would say boo and nothing else.
Or ba. Or ba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or duh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she really is getting, oh, I'm trying to put something at the end there, and she's, you know, struggling for the K sound. But as you said, that's pretty late. So book is not that bad.
Not that bad. And she's got other things. Well, I should have probably gone ahead and read her question or read the comment that she sent, but she has some other really nice strengths, some of her words that she's using. And Chloe wrote that she uses high, I, hot, yeah, this, that, da, da, hot. Let's see, that's already up to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Ought for out and up, 9 for book, fly, baby, and die, die. See, she's already, even though they're approximations, they still count as words, even though that she's using those sound substitutions. So I'm glad she called. I hope it really did make her feel better. It didn't really sound like it to me, but I hope she feels better and will just keep doing what she's doing, because she sounds like she's really on top of things. Are you there? Oh, I think, I'm not sure if we've lost Kate, are you there?
I'm here.
I think, I don't know what happened there. Oh, you might have been switching your phones. That's what happened. Okay, well.
I can hear you.
Can
you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. I couldn't hear you before.
Every time I can hear the whole time, and I'm saying, I'm here, and I always wonder, can they hear, can people hear that? Anyway, I can hear you.
Okay, well, I hope Chloe feels better, because I do think that she's, her little girl's name is Zoe. That's so cute, Chloe.
Hey.
But I do think that she's on the right track, and I do hope we made her feel better. And what I said was, it didn't really sound like we made her feel better, but maybe, maybe we really did. So hopefully so. Okay, let's move on.
She has more words than
than Mom was giving her credit for on the phone. I mean, those approximations, I would count them.
Me too, totally. Mm-hmm. I would totally count them. Especially, and you brought up a good point, when she sees a hat, does she say hot? And that lets you know she's really labeling that. I mean, that's her word for that. And that's how parents know. Like, if a kid is just saying dada, but they are not really referencing their fathers or referencing, you know, what they're talking about, like really, you know, that they're labeling that, then I wouldn't count that as I wouldn't even count that really as dada if she's not using it purposefully to call her dad or, you know,
right,
label her dad. But if she's, you know, sees a hat and says hot, that is definitely a word. And
right.
We would
say, that's right, hat. And yeah, you know that's what she knows it is. And eventually, the more she says it, I mean, I think always key is just have them keep saying it and you keep modeling it with that nice, long, exaggerated A sound, you know, hat, and she's going to get it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
She's going to hear it a few more times.
And she sounds chatty. You know, I heard some things that she was doing in the background, so that's great that she's so noisy and so vocal. And the other thing that Chloe said in her comment is that she would do animal sounds all day long. That's awesome. So, you know, animal sounds are made up of the same consonants and vowels that we use to make real words. So she's already doing her practicing, and I would certainly target those vowel sounds through there. And I think in time she's going to get better. So I hope that we reassured her and that she just knows she's on the right track. So,
right,
there you go. All right, let's move on to, sorry, a little cough there. Let's move on to our second comment. And I didn't say, for anybody that might not be listening through my website at teachmetotalk.com, if they've just found us on Blog Talk Radio, I have a website for parents and professionals that has lots of information on there about working with children, and especially toddlers and younger preschoolers with language delays, and that's at teachmetotalk.com. And when I'm saying I got a comment from a parent, I'm meaning that they left me a little email or a little comment there on the website after they read an article. And so that's how we take lots of topics for the show, is from those emails or comments that we get on there. So this is another one that I received, so let me go ahead and read it. It says, hi, I'm so glad I found this article. My son has been having a lot of...
Wait, what's that? What article?
Okay, let me see. She's talking about, you know, when you're on the website, Kate, you know how you can read an article and then it'll have comments at the bottom?
Right.
So let me go see if I can find it really quickly. What... article she was referring to. She was reading Successful Strategies for Working with Toddlers with Apraxia and Other Speech-Language Difficulties. And this is kind of a general article that I wrote pretty early on when I started the website, when people would say, exactly how do you get a two-year-old to sit down and play with you? And it's kind of a do's and don't article. And it really talks about doing everything in play and making it real fun and just kind of a basic how-to article. And, again, that's called Successful Speech Therapy Strategies for Working with Toddlers. And so she says, I'm so glad I found this article. My son has been having a lot of language, sensory, social issues for months, and it's been a struggle to get help for him. He is 30 months old now, so that's 2.5, and just had his evaluation through early intervention. They placed him at 9 months old for both his receptive and expressive speech, which is near a 70% delay, at 15 months for social issues, and he has several different sensory issues, mainly auditory and auditory language. I haven't seen the reports yet, but the therapist told me that he needs sensory stimulation, but that his threshold to handle it is very low. They weren't sure exactly what sensory techniques would work for him. That being said, the waiting list for therapy, which she has said at OT, speech, and developmental, are long, especially speech therapy, being about a 6 to 12-month wait. So they would like for him to see a child psychiatrist, also a 2 to 3 month wait, and then are preparing him to start a preschool program when he starts 3. I bet she doesn't really mean child psychiatrist. I bet she means psychologist. for an assessment.
Yeah.
She says, I want to get all the benefit that he can now, because to me his delays seem extreme, and I would totally agree with her on that. Those are some pretty significant delays.
Yeah, and what I know that he's 30 months and he's functioning at the 9 months receptive and expressive level. That is pretty delayed.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty delayed. And then he's 15 months for social issues, so he must have some early kind of back and forth things. Let's see what she says. Let's see. I know his delays seem extreme, and I know the earlier he gets intervention, the better the outcome. I've done so much research that my eyes are spinning. Oh, poor mom. And I keep coming down to the fact that he has autistic tendencies. I don't know how to help him with language when he has the sensory issues as well. Will the suggestions in this article work for him? If I can't get him into speech therapy right away, I'm so sorry about the coughing. She says, I want to try everything at home with him that I possibly can. Well, that's a great start for mom saying, you know, I really need to work with him on the language. But I think that it sounds like the sensory stuff, that term is so unfamiliar to her that it's freaked her out a little bit. Let me finish reading the rest of it. She says, we're starting to sign with him as well, and he's learned the sign more so far, but he's resisting the others. Boy, haven't we seen that, Kate.
Yeah, I thought that when I read it. Could name a few kids who fit that description.
Yeah, he has several words he uses as well as when he wants something, but usually they consist mainly of sounds that we understand but no one else does. She goes on to say he's obsessed with the alphabet and numbers. Anything sequential, he likes to line up everything as well. He loves flashcards and used to read all the letters off them and says most of the words. He also could read the words without pictures present. But lately he stopped doing that, and he's just saying I-E for every card and lining them up on the floor, the bed, the table, and around his room. He gets so very frustrated when his 9-month-old brother says words from the flashcards. Aw. Sorry this is so long. I just really want to help him somehow in his frustration. He's a sweet, loving boy, but he hasn't made progress in so long and is regressing in so many ways. Do you have any suggestions? Yes, we certainly do. First of all, I cannot believe that there's a 6 to 12 month wait for speech. And she did email me back. I also emailed her today and asked her if she would like to be on the show, but she wasn't able to do that. And she sent me back in her email the state that she lives in, which I'm thinking was Illinois. I don't have the email right in front of me, but it's in Illinois. And she did go on to say that she's found another speech pathologist in another town, another county, that's willing to see him for an eval and give her some initial strategies, do kind of a home program for him, and then see her periodically and, you know, follow up by email. And I love that she went ahead and went the extra step and said, okay, if I can't get him speech through the first way that I was going to try, I'm going to keep on digging until I can find someone that's willing to see him. And she also said that the hospital in her area has a long way, that another agency, that the speech pathologist quits. They have like 60 kids on a waiting list. So, I just so feel for this mom who's not able to, you know, get consistent help right away, because, like she said, now is the time, 2.5. You do not want to waste any time. You don't want to wait to hear what the speech pathologist says 6 months from now. You want to really get started working on language with him right away. She's got some strengths already going for her, though, Kay. Do you want to talk about those? Within the signing?
Oh, sorry. Wasn't with you there. she is starting the ball rolling on using signs, and I would definitely go there with this child. He might also, and I'm throwing this out, we really haven't discussed it, be a good candidate for using some pictures, because it does sound like he's really, really, really visual. But
yeah,
that's kind of a different avenue. I kind of like a combination of both with some kids anyway, so I think signs are kind of inherently more social, and I like that aspect of them. And I would say keep building on those signs, and we totally know what you mean when you say he's getting stuck on more, because I think for kids who, may have some motor planning difficulties, signing is pretty hard. They get more, and more does work for a lot of things. I mean, it is
right.
A really, really functional sign, and kids kind of sometimes, not all kids, but certainly there are quite a few kids who kind of cling to that, and we're saying, no, we want you to tell me, sign eat or say eat or sign or say go, and they're still telling you more, more, more.
I saw a little boy like that this morning. He's saying more now, but and he's saying some other things too, but boy, I bet I got more 70 times in that hour because that's his go-to word, and as it should be. You know, he's a new talker, and the same thing with the sign. It is kind of hard sometimes to help children move on beyond that, and you want to keep rewarding them more but still teaching other ones. And, you know, what I would do is take his little hands and help him do another sign. It does sound like he has quite a few sensory issues, and it sounds like that, again, might be new information for the mom. Don't let that freak you out in that you think, oh, I don't even know how to work with him because they say he's got these sensory issues, and I'm not an OT. I don't know how to do that. Read the report, see what she says she doesn't have those yet, see what those initial recommendations are. There probably are some initial things that they would start with. She didn't say that he couldn't get, let's see, what did she say? She said that there were waiting lists for therapy, and so it sounds like she might have to wait a little bit for OT and developmental therapy as well, but she will probably get started on those sooner than she would speech. But my point about all this is don't panic and think, oh, well, I can't do anything with him because he has sensory issues. That is absolutely not true. You're still going to want to work on the language things. And, you know, if he's a kid that needs lots of movement, you're going to want to incorporate movement when you're playing with him. So you're going to do the things that we've talked about. It seems like every week we talk about this, using bubbles, using balloons, using, if he likes cars, you're going to race the car across the floor and then have him run, get it, and bring it back to you to start over, you know, so you can do your little routine again. So there are fun, practical ways to include whatever sensory issue he has and let that be a part of your day and a part of your little play sessions with him. Although they didn't say he's on the spectrum, he certainly sounds like that to me based on what Mom has said about him. So I would get a book like Engaging Autism by Stanley Greenspan to kind of give you the theoretical background if that interests you and if you're a reader. If you're not, don't worry about it. You don't have to have a book to tell you how to do it. But you, the premise with Dr. Greenspan that he talks about in his book is really building that one-on-one playtime and that reciprocal play and that back-and-forth interaction. And, again, that's called floor time, which is his main technique. And that's the basic therapy approach that you want to use with these children so that he gets the social piece, too. It sounds like his social skills, according to what Mom told us, were a little higher than his language skills. So she wants to build on a lot of those little social routines and stuff. One thing, Kate, when we were talking about this earlier today, when we were talking about what the emails and what we were going to do on the show, it was funny when we were saying the numbers and the letters, and you went, oh, that's why we tell moms all the time, stop all that. Stop with the letters, stop with the numbers, stop with the, you know, all those pre-academic things. You know, don't do a lot of flashcards because kids that have these tendencies really get hooked on that and get so hyper-focused on anything visual like that that they often miss all those opportunities to develop their play skills and develop the social piece and the connectedness with other people and other things because they're, you know, holding their number flashcards or you're trying to look at, you know, something with them. And I evaluated a little boy yesterday and was trying to get him to do, I'm doing the preschool language scale with him, and he didn't want to answer any of the questions or respond to any of the things that we were doing. But every time I flipped the page, he would try to tell me what the number was, the little bitty quarter of an inch number in the right-hand corner, you know, 13, instead of, you know, what question we were talking about. So, again, that's another reason that we, Kate and I, are so opposed to all of the numbers, letters, and stuff. And she did say that he's reading a little bit, you know, even without the pictures present, the words. And I did want to address this because I had another mom on the website ask me a question about this with early reading. You know, early reading is called hyperlexia. and it really is associated with children that are on the autism spectrum. And a lot of parents get so excited because they think, oh, she's reading, she's a genius, this is awesome. And I'm not knocking that skill. I'm just saying, one, it's not typical, and two, it, you know, it's really a red flag that other developmental skills are not at that same place. And so then we call those splinter skills, meaning that she's got some skills that are way up there and, you know, off the charts, and then but missing lots of very basic skills. You know, some of these kids sometimes can read the words, but they don't have, a, you know, any understanding of what the words mean. So you want to be sure that it's not just a little reading, you know, that you're not so excited about that, that you miss that, gosh, that really indicates that things might not be solidly developmentally, you know, coming in like we expect them to do. It's atypical. So just a little, that's also a red flag for that.
I would say one thing she doesn't mention, which does frequently go with some of these other things she says are true about him, is that he has a keen interest in music, or really seems to enjoy music, or, and I would maybe guess that he does, but sometimes, you know, she said he has auditory sensory issues. Maybe he's one of those kids who doesn't, but just based on all the other descriptions, it kind of makes me think, I wonder if this little guy really likes music, and if that is the case, I would really, really, really encourage her to try and use that. I'd also, I don't know how much time she spent on your website. You need to check out Laura's DVDs, start with Teach Me to Talk, the first one, and get a, you know, a firsthand real-life look at what, how do you play with a kid who is, you know, 30 months old, but at the 15-month level socially, or at the 9-month level with receptive and expressive language skills, and because she's the master. Get an idea of what it looks like, and there really is kind of, you know, it's a really kind of hyper-animated, playful, absolutely demand in the most loving way possible his attention. Because I suspect, you know, those auditory sensory things, those, you know, I don't know what other sensory things, but what happens with some kids with sensory issues, and kids in general, but certainly to a greater extent, kids with sensory issues, is they oftentimes get kind of hyper-focused on one thing, maybe the lights, maybe the fan, maybe the, you know,
flashcards.
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe the lining up the cars that he just, you know, loves to do. And meanwhile, mommy or daddy or brother or sister, whatever the case may be, is trying to show him the book or talk to him about what he wants for lunch or whatever it might be. And if they're so focused on whatever thing they might be focused on, they're really not attending. You know, sometimes those kids have difficulty with eye contact. Sometimes they look at you and it's almost like they're looking right through you. You know, when you're, you know, I think, oh, he's looking at me. And then I think, no, he's looking right past me.
Yeah.
You know, if you're the parent of one of a kid like this, you know probably what I'm describing, where you think you've got his attention. You'll know you have his attention when his eyes are looking at you and there's a little twinkle in them. You know, he's really looking at you. And in order to get that attention, that's where everything really needs to start, is how am I going to get him to twinkle at me more and more and more and more and more each day? And the way to do that is a really on the floor, in the trenches, playful, grab his attention and don't let it go approach. And if you'll watch the DVDs, I know you have them on the website and I think they're on YouTube too, and Breakdown, believe me, you'll be very happy you did get the DVDs so you have them and you can watch them and watch them and watch them. And I always joke with Laura about, got to do the Southern thing, but Laura, it is, it really helps, because a Southern accent kind of is more melodic, you know, and it's, it has it up and down, and it helps get kids' attention. So, you know, work
on
that.
You're using a sing-song voice there. Use a real sing-songy voice. Instead of saying, want a cookie, you're saying, cookie, so that it's, they're naturally children, you know, and research tells us that children are really drawn to that more melodic, parent ease. They call it.
Oh, they call it mother ease.
You're
just being politically correct.
And I am trying really hard to be politically correct lately because I seem to offend lots of people when I don't try.
I'll call it mother ease. You can call it parent ease. I went to school, they called it parent ease.
They called it mother ease when you went to school.
Oh, you're right. I mean mother ease. You're right. I'm confused.
And
people sometimes think that's the way you talk to a baby, and they're right. That is the way you talk to a baby, but that is also the way you need to talk to kids who really are not taking in the language you're sharing with them. So
right, language light. And we know that he has, I mean, Shardy says that he has auditory processing problems or and sensory issues, so that to me means he tunes out mm-hmm. what he hears, or he might be super sensitive to noises like the vacuum cleaner or a fire truck, or he might be a kid with music that doesn't like it if the he's hearing blaring music, but he could tolerate it if his mom is singing a soft little song and they're playing that way. So he might be a kid that's sensitive to some noises too. We don't know. We don't have enough information to kind of go with that. But usually when they say that, it's either usually when therapists say that, it's that they're responding. They either don't respond at all to language, and or they have the kind of scared or hyper reaction.
I'm guessing
reaction.
It's that, and that's a total guess. I'm guessing things scare them. The lawnmower, the vacuum cleaner, the garbage disposal, the hair dryer, all those kind of mechanical, somewhat loud.
Right.
I've had doorbell kids. Every time the doorbell rings, they totally freak out. So I'm guessing it's that. It'll be interesting. Hopefully she'll get back to us or maybe be able to be on a show in the future and she can clarify that. But
yeah, and her OT is going to give her different ways to handle that. Lots of OTs say that children, you get their little bodies, quote-unquote, regulated. So you give them lots of movement. You give them, you help them kind of calm down, for lack of a better word, and then they're able to tolerate those noises a little bit better. She does say that his threshold to handle it's very low, so that probably is what she means by that. He probably is tuning out, though, some language. It does sound like that he has some words that she says that he uses, but nobody recognizes them except mom and dad. So it's great that he's trying to verbally communicate. Again, my guess would be that he's not terribly socially connected and doesn't have a ton of that back and forth. I'm going to play with you, not just I'm going to play here and you're going to do your own thing, and I have really no interest that you're even in the same room with me. That would be kind of my read on this little boy too. The flashcards, I know that he really likes those, but I would put those up and try to use toys where you can engage him a little bit better. The only time I would probably use flashcards is if I couldn't do anything else with him, and we would totally make that a requesting game. And I would try to work on him being a little flexible with that, in that, he's not necessarily going to get to line him up like he wants to. So, you could talk with your therapist about different ways to work on that. But with those kinds of kids, and with kids, say, that are hyper-focused on push-button and, bells and whistle toys, I usually recommend moms and dads, take the batteries out of those and put those away for a while. Some parents don't really want to follow through with that because they say, gosh, that's what he likes. I can't take that away from him. But you find out lots of those children that when you remove that, they do go on and learn how to play with other things and interact with you better when you take away what really has encompassed all their attention. Like a little boy that I saw today, my first appointment this morning, is not on the spectrum, but he does have some little sensory quirks, and he likes to watch, wheels and choo-choo wheels and car wheels and things. And his mom also noticed that he kept running over to look at the lights a few weeks ago, and it's because they had installed those little swirly light bulbs, those new ones, Kate.
Oh, yeah.
And his OG happened to be there with me today, and she said, you know, I think it's just that he's really recognizing that pattern, so I wouldn't have these lights on, because he didn't look at it for very long if the lights were off, but if the light was on, he must have gotten just enough little visual buzz, for lack of a better word, when he looked at it, that he really just wanted to look at the lamp a lot. And he's a kid that really moves a lot, and that you know, likes to crash and likes to do that, but when the lights are off, he finds other things to do, and he, you know, moves on. So that's my point about those flashcards. She might be able to just put those up for a little while, or if she's going to use them, she needs to figure out some language activities and games that she can play with those, that it's not all about lining them up or any other little quirky thing that he likes to do with those.
Yeah, I always encourage, I mean, I totally would encourage her to put that stuff up, but like you said, if it can't happen or that's the only way that he really will engage with her, then I always encourage moms to make that as social as possible. I would do
right. Weird
stuff like hide him in his shirt, you know, pretend you put one behind your back and ask him where to go, so that he's
right. Really
kind of forced to somehow include her into the routine. And kids will, I'd say it's really better to establish new routines that are inherently
right. More
social,
right. Because
he may be so set in the pattern with those that. And frankly, I think that kids are generally more sensitive with their mothers and sometimes
right. Their
dads than they are with therapists. They will let us, because they're not as comfortable with us, even though we're doing our best to be their best friend in the world. With moms, oftentimes, if mom tries to do it, they have a total meltdown. You know,
right. They're
just, their little worlds are rocked to the core. But if we grab the cards and put them in their shirt, or you know, snatch them away and say they're mine, or, you know, somehow be kind of disruptive of their kind of repetitive routines, they will accept that a lot more easily than with mom. So, you know, that being said, she'd probably have more luck just kind of putting those away and then really kind of establishing some new routines with things that are, like you said, like bubbles and balloons and fishing around game. And
yeah. Look
at, you have another great article about toys that you think are good for working on both expressive and receptive language skills on your website, Lauren. I think they
right. Have
a lot of great ideas, and she should check that out and get some few of those things. And I totally encourage parents to really, when you get those things, to put them up and keep them for those special times that you're going to do, really, 20 to 30 minute sessions a day, whether that be just with mom or mom one time, dad another time. If you have an active grandparent, by all means, pull them into the mix. But don't just let him have those bubbles. Don't just let him have whatever it is, the new car toy that he loves, because you know, once you do, they're not going to be nearly as effective when you get them out, you know, later to try and use them for therapy playtime.
Right, and sometimes moms, you know, when we see a child for therapy, a kid will love a toy so much, the mom will go buy it, and I'll go back the next week, and I'll say, oh, no, you know, he really loved that with me, but now it's not novel anymore, and he doesn't really maybe want to play with that as much. So, again, putting that away really does have value, and you'll get more participation and more interest if you save it for those special times. I did want to mention a toy that we love, Kate, that's a newer thing that we've added, and it's the My Little Pony Ferris wheel. And I got mine at, I think I bought my first one at Walmart, then I've gotten a couple other ones at Target, but that's a great toy for kids that are older toddlers, like this little guy, or even for preschoolers. And, you know, the My Little Pony is such a girl toy, but this Ferris wheel has little seats, five or six little seats that you can fit. I've been using the My Littlest Pet Shop animals in there. Have we talked about this on the show already?
I don't think so, which is amazing since I loved it so much I went and bought a backup.
Yeah.
Laura gave me one as a gift, and it was like, woo, that is a, we haven't had that great a find in a while. You know, we're always looking for the latest and greatest. Laura found this, and she said, oh, boy, this has been wonderful. So then she bought me one. Yeah, and I loved it so much that I thought, okay, it's going to break eventually. And, again, I would not allow a two-year-old to have this toy. But it's probably older than that, first of all. But second of all, they tend to spin it, and I think if they spin it enough, it'll break. Thankfully, they haven't broken yet, but that's how obsessive I am. I went and bought my backup so that when this one breaks, I will have the new one ready to go.
Well,
yeah, and we just use different animals with it.
You can. And some of the little characters, some of your people that you have at home, like one of your little people or Fisher-Price animals, those are going to be too big for it. So you're going to have to look for little ones. And I've had some moms kind of go, oh, those things are too little for him. He's going to put it in his mouth. So that's my, again, you know, the little animals or birds or characters or whatever you use would be too small for them to play with on their own, but you could definitely put it up. But that's a winner for our therapist to routinely listen.
It plays music and it goes around and they just love it.
It's got a little star that you push to make it stop and go, and it's for kids who have longer attention spans. There's kind of a longer little song that it plays, and then for kids who have barely can attend to anything, there's a little shorter version that's kind of on the demo setting. But that's a great toy. I think it's about $22, $23. Well worth the money if you're a therapist. It is a winner. And I was just thinking that I need to update that toys article and put that toy on there because that's a go-to toy. We talked about Animal Hospital a few weeks ago or back in December when I got that Target version of that toy with the it's a little house-looking thing, and it has six doors and a set of keys, and you have to match the colored key to the colored door. And it comes with little plush animals, but I've been using farm animals in there. I put some of my little characters in there and kind of rotate through so kids, you know, even kids that I see every week don't know what the little surprise is going to be inside. So that's kind of a winner, too. That toy might be a teeny bit hard for him to manipulate, the little boy that we were just talking
about. The good thing about that, and I have lots of kids who are his age who can't use the keys yet. They know on some level the keys have to open the doors, but, you know, they get them in, they don't rotate the right way, or they can't get them in. So I kind of like those things that kids really need your help with. Because in some way, shape, or form, he's going to have her help. And that's right where I'd be putting that help sign in and saying, oh, you want help, and take his little hands. The help sign, in case you're listening, in case you don't know, is a fist with a thumb up in an open in the other hand, which has an open palm. And do
the hitchhiker sign is how I think about it.
Oh, okay, the hitchhiker, yeah, like, yeah, near ride. Put your thumb up, or just like thumbs up. You take that fist with your thumb up and put it in your other hand. And that's a great thing to know.
Yeah.
So, and a great word for kids to know. You know, I don't know this child, and again, I'm taking a total guess, but sometimes when kids present like this, they have a tendency to kind of take your hands and, you know, put them on
make
the keys.
Make you do it for them.
Or, you know, that you have they have the keys, they'll hand you the keys, and then take your hand and kind of shove it over the door, as if to say, open the door, Mommy, but they're not saying any of that, but they're trying to enlist your services to help them. And that's where I would stop and say, oh, you want help, and teach that word and sign right there. Because there is something, I laugh about this, something in the genes about boys that they just love keys. I don't know what it is. Remote starts with balls, and then it moves on up, and then you get into the vehicles, and eventually they get to keys, and it's not too old. Even little kids like keys. But even if they can't use them, they on some level get, oh, this door is stuck and there's something cool inside, and you're saying, key, you need the key. Oh, open. And I always give kids the opportunity to try, and nine times out of ten they can't. You know, even if they can get it in, they can't get it open.
And if he won't sign help for you, you know, you're going to take his hands and do that. But an important precursor to that is you just holding your hand out and him realizing, oh, she's saying give me something here. And, you know,
if he's not automatically handing her the keys, she needs to start that. Exactly.
Yeah, and she can. That's another way to kind of build that purposeful interactive communication where he's going to place those keys in your hand. So, you know, that's somewhere to start too, or especially if they're on the floor and she's saying, what do you need? What are we going to use? You know, if he's already tried it and realizes he can't do it, Mom could say, you get the keys, give me the keys, you know, and again, that's a way to work in that him following that verbal direction from you. You know, and one other thing that I wanted to say about this, and then I want us to move on and get to that third question that we had, because that's a mom that we had on the show a few weeks ago, and I want to be sure we're talking about her question.
Okay.
But she said that his expressive and his receptive language scores were at the 9-month level. So that means he's understanding less than a 1-year-old does, and he's 2.5. And so she can't go think that he's just automatically going to talk. She has to build lots of opportunities in their day and in their play sessions for him to learn how to understand language. And, you know, had this conversation earlier today, too. You can't really be fooled if a kid is just saying a word, because he may have no idea what he really means by that. And so you have to really make sure that children understand language, and that is more important, in my opinion, than them actually being able to say it. So she needs to really be sure that she's working on that receptive language, too, and not get so caught up in hearing words. Or for some children who are on the spectrum, they're echolalic. They say a lot of things they don't understand. They may be able to quote a whole television show and not have any real comprehension of that. So, you know, don't be fooled by that. Just because he's saying it doesn't automatically mean that he truly understands what it means. So you're going to want to, make sure that you're working on following commands and him really understanding language too.
I will point her, Laura, because I know you want to move on, but you have another great article, and I never know the proper title, so I'll describe it. You can label it. The one that talks about building social routines with your baby, your child, or...
I think it's social games for babies and toddlers.
Okay.
Yeah.
She needs to really take a look at that, and again, look at the clips from the DVD, so, and then invest in the first DVD.
Yeah.
And maybe even
Teach Me to Listen and Obey.
Yeah,
go with that first one. The second one has more advanced vocabulary with action words, and which are verbs, and location words, which are prepositions, and descriptive words, you know, your adjectives and your adverbs. And those are things that you're going to want to work on eventually. But really, Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1 just talks about helping children develop that basic social connection and understand language, and it breaks it down for parents to use. I use the little taglines, tell him, show him, help him. So you're going to tell him what you want him to do, show him how to do it, like with those keys. You would say, look, the key goes in, and you might turn it, and then give him the keys and say, you know, you do it, and if he can't do it, then you're going to actually take his little hand and help him get the key in the hole and turn it. And again, sometimes kids can't do that because of motor concerns, but sometimes they can't do it because they don't understand what the heck you mean by put the key in the door and turn it. So, you know, you have to help them learn what those words mean too. And that's what I mean by working on his receptive language or his comprehension. But the article that Kate referred to too is Social Games for Babies and Toddlers, and it just lists little routines and little rhymes and little songs that parents can use to work on that. There are probably some questions and answers about that on the website, too, related to that article that that mom could find helpful as well.
Okay,
let's move on and answer Jana's question. And if you're a regular listener of Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate, Jana was a mom that we had on a couple weeks ago that has a 2-year-old, and he had hardly any words. Is that right, Kate? Am I remembering that correctly?
I think he'd been in some therapy, and she had gotten the DVD, and he'd made some progress, and I think
they had not gotten the DVD when we first talked to her. I sent her that after it, and so, but I do think that he had a handful of words when he started, she had started signs on her own,
mm-hmm.
and we were happy about that. She had a therapist that she was kind of concerned about their approach, and so then we got some kind of background with that, and so I think she has a new person now, but she sent us a follow-up. She says, hi, Laura, it's me again. We have been working with Jacob on some of the things from your video, and I have a few questions. Shocked, aren't you? She's got a cute sense of humor.
Preschool
first,
mom. Yeah.
Yeah. She says, first, Jacob is picking up new words. She says, very slowly. She's written that out, you know, V-E-R-R-R-R-R-Y. But he is. But here's the thing. They don't have to do with what we're working on. Like, we had been working on we, like Kate suggested on the podcast, and he has finally picked up ye. And then she says, okay, that was a bad example. But now I think he is calling me Mimi instead of Mama. And she says, do you think he's fixing to morph the new with the old into Mommy? And I think that's a great way to look at that, as he's kind of picked up the end of, he hears the me for Mommy, and he's decided, okay, I don't really want to call her Mama anymore, but he's kind of going to that in-between me, and so hopefully in a few weeks she's going to hear the Mommy. And I was reading that, I was thinking, oh, I bet that's what's happened, and then she said it herself. So I do think that's what's happening with his
Well, I think one of her things was he didn't have a long E sound. She had identified that that was just a sound. He and I said, try the we, and it sounds like his best approximation at this point was ye, which he got the long E sound.
Which is fine. So yeah, you were going for the vowel.
Yeah, that worked. And then he bumped Mama over to Mimi, and I think it's a matter of time before he will eventually go back to Mommy.
Yeah, I do too. He just can't sequence it yet. She was a little bit worried about apraxia with him, and I think I would still kind of be concerned about that, just kind of based on what she said, you know, is happening with that. And that'll, you know, again, that's not something to be, you know, totally go into a hand-wringing moment. Oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? It just, you know, kind of is a way to describe what's happening with his sound system and with his how he's adding words. And she says, more often than not, he just comes out with a random word.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and that's called pop-out words, and that's a Pamela Marcella term. And it just, children who go on to be diagnosed with apraxia usually have this in their histories. They might say a word one time and never again, or they might pop out a hard word, like go, helicopter! And you go, oh, my gosh, where did that come from?
How can you not say Mommy and you can say helicopter? Of course, typically they say it once.
Right,
know,
one time and then
I'm hearing
again.
Things. No, Daddy heard it, too. He said helicopter. But then you don't hear it again.
You don't hear it again. And, again, that really is kind of associated in children with who go on to be diagnosed with apraxia. So that's another kind of little red flag. And so my response to that with regarding pop-out words, I think that just means, okay, it's in there somehow, some way. My job is to just keep pouring the language in and teaching him lots and lots of new words, because eventually we're going to hear that. When you do hear a pop-out word, I always try to get a kid to say it again. More often than not, with children who are truly apraxic, that doesn't happen right away. But I try anyway, and if a kid has had a pop-out word with me in one session related to a specific toy, boy, I'm bringing that same toy back in again the next time to see if we can hear that
word again. Hoping
lightning
strikes twice.
Yeah,
that's it again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you do just kind of keep pouring it in there, and you know her point about he's getting some words, but it's not necessarily what we work on. Oh well, just keep plugging away because those words will come. Okay, and then she says, secondly, I know that typical kids need to have a vocabulary of 35 words minimum to start forming phrases. I made a list of all Jacob's words and signs. He has 24 signs and 21 words, so he is adding those. But he is saying on his own some two-word phrases like mo woo woo when he wants to watch another train video. And she says, I think one other more request that I can't think of right now. Do you combine the word list and give him a vocabulary of 40 or so words so that he, you know, we can work on combining words? Is that why he can combine words? Who knows why he can do it? He's just certainly gotten to that point where he is able to do that two-word request. I'm glad that he's able to do that. I wouldn't get so caught up in, you know, I want parents to keep a vocabulary list and to think about that and to know that, you know, he needs that minimum vocabulary before you start working on phrases. But at the same time, I wouldn't naturally jump to phrases right now. You know, we were talking to that mom last week or about her question about why her children don't have more consistent phrases, and both of us agreed that she should work to increase his single word vocabulary more and that those phrases will just come. Sometimes phrases don't just come with children with apraxia, so because the sequencing is really, really hard, but my advice for Jana to work with Jacob is still just going to be to build that two-word vocabulary. And if he says some phrases on his own, great, but don't necessarily think that phrases are going to be your target yet. Keep just working on developing that vocabulary.
Right. I think, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Laura, but when you say 40 to 50 words, you mean spoken words, right?
I totally do, yeah. Uh-huh. And so I wouldn't
add them, no.
Yeah, I wouldn't, yeah. And I would try not to be so focused on that right now. Mm-hmm. And celebrate his little phrase, and that's terrific, and that would be great. And so she's going to know, okay, he can get more with woo-woo for choo-choo. So when she does start working on phrases, more is, you know, going to be your go-to pattern, more something else at the beginning. But I would keep working on that vocabulary and not over-focus on phrases right now because that's going to be a mistake. It's going to be too hard, and he's going to end up with then just a little set pattern of two-word phrases and not have moved on. So you want to do that. Then she says, I had him reevaluated by another ECI therapist, and he was still put at a 15-month level to his expressive language. She says, but that was before he started combining some words into two-word phrases. That therapist swore to me that once we got rid of his PASI, his vocabulary would skyrocket. And I know that isn't true, but I'm so darn tired of everyone telling me they're worried about his PASI that I got rid of it. And then she says, let's move past the PASI, folks, and focus on his talking. You know, totally agree. Kids, unless it is just plugged in his mouth and he never takes it out, the pacifier is not the reason that he is language delayed. And I don't know what else to say about that. You know, it's not the reason. That's just, it's not the reason. But she's already taken it away, so I wouldn't give it back unless he's having trouble
like
sleeping.
Like a response from that therapist, if he isn't talking in full sentences in 2 months, why taking away the PASI didn't do the trick, right?
Yeah, I know. It's so kind of crazy. So
well, and so, I mean, haven't you seen so many kids? My kids weren't really PASI kids, but
all three of my kids were PASI kids.
Well, at 18 months could talk in phrases, even sentences,
yeah.
And they've had a PASI in their mouth as they did it.
Yeah,
you know.
As they did it. Or I would say, I don't understand you with that PASI in your mouth. And they would pop it out and say,
I want more cookies, Mommy.
Yeah. Want to go swing. Want to go outside. And then pop that PASI back in. And the pacifier is not the reason. Otherwise, it would only be children who had pacifiers who had language delay. And that's simply not the case. And, you know, again, if he has a PASI in 24/7, he may not have as many opportunities to talk, but it is not the reason that he is a late talker. So I agree with her. Let's move past the PASI, folks, and focus on his talking. So there you go. She also says she's written some other stuff about his sounds, which, again, sounds more like some more apraxic red flags there. But, again, I want to encourage Jana to continue just to build vocabulary at this point and work on words and not worry so much about articulation and overanalyzing that she misses his word approximations and that his attempts to add new words. So that should be the theme of the program today, is don't focus so much on how a kid says it. Just go with their content. Go with what they mean and celebrate their successes so that they're more encouraged to try to communicate verbally with you and learn more words and build their vocabularies. And then you can fix all that artic stuff later. Don't focus on it when they're 1 and 2. It is a big, big mistake. Okay. You still there?
I'm here.
Okay.
I was listening.
Okay, I think we're out of time already, but great comments today. I love the comments that I'm getting on the website, and again, we talked about last week, that's the very best way to get a question answered, so send me your comments to Laura at teachmetotalk.com, or email, that's my email address, but go on the website there. If you want to ask a question or leave a comment and have us address it here on the podcast, that's the very best way to make sure that we do that. I also routinely get such good questions like from these moms that I'll invite you to be on our show, but you don't have to wait for an invitation for that. You can always call us. We didn't even give out the number today, but you can always call in, and we would love to take your question. I think we might do a little bit better in our responses if we have a little bit of a heads up and can formulate answers, but we don't have to do that either.
Well, the nice thing about when they call live is that we're able to say, well, how does he like music? Does he, you know,
right.
What does he like to do? What, you know, because then we can really respond to that child
specific.
More specifically than just
yeah.
general, maybe he likes this, maybe he doesn't that. But
yeah.
We give it our best shot either way.
Either way, but we would love for you to call us, and we'd love to hear from you next week, and I'd love to hear from you on my website before then. So I hope either way we get to hear from you and help you answer your questions and help your late-talking children learn how to talk.
Sounds good, Laura.
All right. We'll have another show
later.
Next week. See
okay.
you then. Bye.
Bye.